Welcome to Cybersecurity Where You Are, the Center for Internet Security's podcast. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO at CIS.
And I'm Tony Sager, Senior Vice President and Chief Evangelist at CIS. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we're online at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or running a state or local government.
So join us on Wednesdays as we discuss trends and threats, explore security best practices, and interview experts in the industry.
Together, we'll clarify these issues, creating confidence in the connected world.
Hello, and welcome to the show, Cybersecurity Where You Are. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO here at the Center for Internet Security, joined by two very special guests. Now, we're talking about human error meets AI missteps, a new frontier in virtual machine risk. So I'm joined by Chris and Michelle. So Chris, how about giving us a quick introduction?
Thanks, Sean. Chris McCullough, Director of the Cloud Security Team. I've been at CIS since early 2022, focused my whole time on working with the MSISAC and as well as the commercial market to try and really, globally, by the way, to try and really help people understand hardened images and the challenges that they face with hardening those operating systems, whether they do it through Secure Suite manually, you know, or that they go to the hardened images directly.
Wonderful. And Michelle.
Thank you so much, Sean, for having me. So I work coinciding with Chris. I am a senior cloud security account executive here. So basically what I do is help organizations build their trust in cloud environments by implementing the CIS security best practices from day one. So we work closely together with our most influential partners, such as AWS, Azure, GCP, and Oracle. And our motto, of course, is start secure and stay secure. So that's what I'm here for. I'm here to empower organizations with security best practices, make sure that they're doing the right thing for themselves and their customers. And it's an awesome part of doing the mission.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Me and Michelle, it seems like we can only ever catch up in San Francisco at RSA, but right. It's always good to see you guys there. It's so fun. But let's jump in then. So Chris, we're going to start off, and obviously, you know, with your leadership here since 2022, you know, the hardened images are really helping minimize that impact of this human error element that we mentioned in virtual machine configuration. Why is that so important and really a mission that you've had, really providing the community an ability to address that risk and really start secure and, you know, building secure from step one. So why is that so important and really what do you want our listeners to be aware of with respect to the hardened images?
Sean, that's a great question. I'll start out by saying, you know, CIS has been doing this great work for, you know, over 25 years. It is such vital and important work. And each one of those steps is so critical. You know, we start out with our, you know, critical security controls and layer on top of that and the benchmarks. And that information is vital and it's critical to doing the work. However, we're still human beings, right? Before we're business people, we're just people. And people, human beings, are prone to mistakes. Our brains just aren't really wired to just spend all our day checking a box, right? So what we see is, despite our best efforts, we see things like the Verizon DBIR report that comes out each year. Each year it gets worse, right? It's not getting better. Human error is not going away despite all of these great advances we have with technology, right? So that leads to the conversations that, you know, by the way, I can't do this work without Michelle. He just helps me through every step of the way. He is willing to jump in and do anything to work with these customers. But what we encounter is, again, despite their best efforts, despite getting all of the right information, you know, even a script requires human element to manage said script, right? So point I'm trying to make to answer that question, Sean, is that percentage of related mistakes due to human error gets worse. Now, interesting point to mention here is this year in 2025, it did decrease, but it didn't really decrease. The point I'm making is that it's still at over 68% of all vulnerabilities are traced back to human element. They just removed employees who intended to do harm. And, you know, it's just an odd scenario. But despite our best efforts, Sean, we still need ways that we can leverage technology to just do better and be better. And the hardened images can really help people do that.
Absolutely. Well, really, Michelle, what I see is a value proposition with the hardened images, right? That start secure, stay secure, as you mentioned. I love that tagline, by the way. That really puts us into a position of this value of reducing that risk, because it is different from just a standard marketplace image. So what's that differentiation? You know, how, let's say you're selling me on the hard images, why implement a hard image?
Fantastic question. And this is a great segue to what Chris was talking about with the Verizon DBIR report. So if you take a look at any standard image today, right, whether you deploy a vanilla-based image, the emphasis is always on usability and not on security. That's by design. But standard images may functionally work, but it's rarely hardened for security out the box. And that's where the CIS hardened images come in, because they're built to align with the CIS benchmarks. And as you know, the CIS benchmarks are community-developed security best practices. So they go through a rigorous amount of testing to ensure that they meet the strictest guidelines of compliance and operational standards. So it's not just about patching vulnerabilities here, Sean. It's also about enforcing secure defaults before a workload even begins.
That's an excellent point, Michelle, because, you know, when I'm thinking about this human element, really, of error, what it's introducing is some of these unknown variables. And if we can move that to a consistent, repeatable process of utilizing a hardened image consistently throughout my DevOps pipeline, that's going to provide to me one less thing I have to think about. One less thing I have to configure, assess, review, audit. And we're going to go through and obviously make sure that configuration hasn't drifted over time without appropriate change management. But it really gets to this point is, I believe there exists examples where a misconfigured virtual machine has led to a breach. Now, Chris, when I'm thinking about this, Michelle, please, I'll see if you both have examples here, but the hardened image itself could have prevented such a breach from occurring if initialization of that was done early enough to prevent ultimately this risk and this breach from occurring. Chris, any examples that you may have in that space?
Well, I don't know that I'll have a specific example, but I can point out a big reason why this is such an important step, right? So organizations that are used to private cloud and they're used to on-premise, where they control all the variables, right? That's a little bit different. They get a little bit more freedom to do some different things. When they go to the public cloud, AWS, Azure, Google, and even Oracle, they're dealing with their environments. It's that shared responsibility model. However, Sean, the reality for organizations, and this is as close to a specific example as I can give you, is the responsibility ultimately is on the organization. Yes, it's a shared responsibility, but you know what? Nobody wants to hear about, well, that was their part. Doesn't matter. Cover it. And really the key part, you know, and I think Michelle will have some good insight on this here in a second, but I wanted to put this out there. For organizations that we talk to, and you can be in New Zealand, Australia, it doesn't matter, we're going to treat you the same. Understand that the AWS's, Azure's, Google's, and Oracle's of the world, they use CIS too. We're built into their platforms as part of their security baseline. So if you really want to put your best foot forward and be as secure as possible, which is a layered approach, as we know, you might want to consider, hey, if the cloud where I'm going to uses CIS and it's built into their platform, then do I need to start doing so? Probably. The best way to do so is a purposefully built or a purpose-built hardened image that is hardened for the platform it's on. And I can't stress that enough. The ones on AWS are built for AWS. What stronger of a footprint and a standard do you need, right? Meeting that baseline, unifying across there, I think that's really the best advice that we can give. Michelle?
No, absolutely, Chris. I can give a little bit more specifics here. And what I mean by that is we live in a constantly evolving threat landscape, right? So, Sean, you already know this, being a CISO. What worked yesterday is not going to work today. And that's the environment that we live in. We live in where organizations are currently making that switch. They're moving more to a hybrid environment, right? This is mainly because of cost savings, and it's also mainly because of, you know, transferring the risk. With that being said, they don't have the appetite and they don't have the ability to make a mistake when they're doing migrations. Who's making sure that those, for example, OpenRDP, OpenSSH ports are not left unintentionally exposed? We've seen cases where organizations have spun up hundreds of VMs during cloud migrations and overlooked those controls, right? So a good part about hardened images is it would have actually kind of disabled those ports, right? And tightly restricted them by default. This cuts off the risk at the source. It's a small change, but it has a massive downstream impact. I'm not going to get into specifics of organization names, but we've dealt with them globally, not just here within the United States.
Of course. And again, I completely appreciate that. You answered that perfectly. Very political. I love it. You guys are the best. One of the things that it also leads to, and I think, Chris, you really hit it there, was the shared responsibility element. In some cases, a lot of organizations don't understand that they do have a responsibility and that it's just, I'm just spinning this up easy, right? All the capital expenditure's gone. I just make it operational. I'll spin it up and it's done. Set and forget. And it's no. It's a set and you've got a lot more responsibility and you've got to be, I think, a lot more aware. Because within that infrastructure, obviously the way the cloud is configured is it's supposed to be accessible. Now, if I build something within an internal environment, it could be behind multiple layers of protection, as you've mentioned. But in that space, it's very, very open, right? They've built a functionality that's supposed to meet many different types of capability. And so in some cases, your responsibility is even greater. So what we'll do here is we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back to talk about AI automation, more shared responsibility, real-world adoption, and a future outlook. We'll be right back.
Are you a U.S. state, local, tribal, or territorial government?
If so, you know just how difficult cyber defense can get.
You're the frontline defense against cyber threats, yet you don't have the shiny tools, big budget, or skilled talent of an enterprise.
Well, guess what? You don't need them.
You do need a community of like-minded folks to unlock the power of collective cybersecurity.
And that's the superpower of the Multi-State Information Sharing and Analysis Center.
The Multi-State ISAC provides cyber underserved organizations with protections they otherwise couldn't afford at a price that works for them.
But it's more than just access to services. It's access to a community of peers where your participation protects them and theirs protects you.
Not to mention access to the 24/7/365 CIS Security Operations Center as your full-time public sector cybersecurity partner.
Available as a single organization or state or territory-wide option, the MSISAC membership provides threat intelligence, monitoring, and more to fortify your cyber defense.
Become a member today by visiting cisecurity.org/ms-isac.
Okay. So we're coming back, and Michelle, you know, what we're seeing, and I don't know that we do a podcast without mentioning AI, so it's right in. So AI is there, we've done it. But AI is now part of DevOps pipelines, right? We're starting to see automation. We're starting to see the utility being integrated into development operations. Are you seeing new forms of risk as now these virtual machines are automatable at scale, anything along those lines?
Absolutely, Sean. I just want to give a little bit of a history lesson here. And the reason I say that is because I remember my mother telling me in the 80s when personal computers came about, right? It kind of replaced the typewriter and people had to make that shift of using Microsoft Word or Word as a form of typing, right? Security went from being like physical security to being more like with the advent of the internet, being data security that we run into today and cybersecurity as we know it. And we live in an exciting time because that change is happening again, and that's AI. So absolutely, what AI does is it accelerates automation, right? But also accelerates mistakes. So if your infrastructure code or AI assistant makes a poor assumption, let's just say by spinning up like an image that lacks basic hardening, all of a sudden those risks get multiplied faster, right? What we're seeing is that hardened images now act as a control layer. So ensuring that when things get deployed, even at speed, we are now at least meeting the baseline security standards. So hopefully that answered the question.
It did. No, that's phenomenal. I love that perspective as well, because it's real world aligned with what we're starting to see, but also the fact that we're aware, right? We can provide capability in this space to help you as you're, you know, representatively changing your DevOps pipeline to integrate really cool technologies. But we've got to make sure safe, secure, we're practicing the right thing and at the right time. And I think that's so important because, Chris, you know, one of the things I think about too, and we'll just jump into the shared responsibility model. You mentioned it. We're going to hit on that one, Chris. So it's we're thinking about one. I think the shared responsibility model has changed. AI tools is another element of responsibility we need to consider. But now we're seeing decisions made faster, representatively faster than we can govern, assess, monitor, control. And those can be exposed for a period of time. If we're not looking, you know, the human in the middle, as it were, that can have some real serious consequences. But I want to get your thoughts in that space.
So the great question. It's such an interesting topic, right? To start off with, you know, I was in the U.S. Army, so I still hold on to the five P's. Proper planning prevents poor performance, right? Security is a layered approach. It's been that way for years. So I reached out on LinkedIn to a CISO of a large company. It's what we do, just to check in, see if we can help. And he said, Chris, I don't know that I need hardened images because AWS is already secure, isn't it? I had to take a deep breath. And the reason why I mentioned that is because, you know, when we add in AI, especially at this early stage of adoption, I know everybody thinks we're so far along because we can do a ton of things. But the reality is I can't think of a single company right now that if I went to a CEO, a CISO, a CIO, all the way down to the manager responsible for hardening, that if I said, hey, do you want to turn over your taxes to you know, you can just do them every year with AI. Are you ready to trust AI? People aren't going to do that because I don't think we're really there. That shared responsibility is a great way to sort of, you know, overarch over top of this, which is, you know, at what point is AI going to really, truly be trusted to run on its own? Because last time I checked, everybody's still responsible. If Michelle wants to use it for his work, our bosses are going to say, great, but you're still responsible for the content. So when we look at that, that's really the challenge I see in the near term. So as Michelle and I tell people is let's focus on the foundational layers and build a solid foundation that can stand the test of going out into the public clouds and at least providing you safety, and we'll build along with AI and those automation tools to make this a little bit more streamlined and whatnot. But again, I really want to call that out because I think these are great tools, but are they ready to be just, you know, let loose in the wild? I don't know yet.
Yeah. Are they enterprise ready, Chris? Great question. And some people are banking that they are without really doing a lot of good judgment. But we'll see the results of those very soon, I assume, Chris. And Michelle, you know, it's and Chris obviously sets this up perfectly, but there is a balance. Human judgment is needed, as he mentioned. But now we're getting to automated security enforcement, right? When we're deploying virtual machines, we want to have that type of capability to go along with, one, we want to see the effective use of AI, the value proposition that it provides. But we've got to be along with the business in that space, right? We've got to support them in order to enable that type of functionality. You cannot forget about the core tenets, the foundation that Chris mentioned. What are your thoughts there?
Absolutely. So it's less about choosing one over the other and more about creating a layered strategy. So what I mean by that is automated enforcement is great for scale and consistency. And that's where the hardened images shine because, you know, human oversight is still essential for contextual risk decisions, like when to deviate from a baseline for a specific workload. So, for example, hardened images gives you that strong starting point so that your engineers can focus on higher order thinking, not just fixing defaults. I know I'm talking a lot about the hardened images as an example, but you know, this is kind of where I am looking at AI in that perspective. And to piggyback off of what Chris said, you know, the shared responsibility model that ties all of this in it doesn't really change the principle, but it just changed the speed and complexity of decision making. Nothing today is going to change what a security engineer implements, because there is always that gray area that we operate in terms of making a executive decision. And I think AI should be used as a tool to complement what your organization's doing after it's been properly vetted. So that's where the human judgment comes in.
Definitely. Definitely. We can't forget it, right? It's all part of the overall plan. Because, I mean, you know, we get to some of these questions and, it, you know, we get to the, I'll say it this way, that you kind of the fiction, the sci-fi element of AI's taking all the responsibility, taking all of the jobs, and, you know, everything's going to be automated completely. We're nowhere close at this point. That there's still a ton of judgment that's required in that space. And I think that needs to be balanced between, you know, what you see through commercial, through, you know, the sci-fi elements, to what's an actual implementation of something that provides business value. And Michelle, and I know you've mentioned it, Chris, this layered approach, so important that that's integrated, right? It's we want to be part of those processes from a security perspective. And Chris, you know, I align to something you just mentioned, and one of the tenets of CIS from a mission-driven perspective is we want to work with customers, we want to work with organizations to do the right thing, right? Make them aware, provide them the tools to be secure, and create that layered approach. Now, have you started to see lessons from organizations that are using the images, the hardened images, scaling security in high-risk environments? And, you know, any examples that you have in that space of what you're receiving back? Because I know you're constantly out there, right, trying to provide them the right information to make better justified decisions.
So what I can tell you about that, again, leaving some of the names out, some of the in the financial industry, they may or may not be, you know, in everybody's wallets. Okay. What we're seeing, it's really positive. Michelle and I are very, very excited about it, because some of those credit card companies have approached us and have built, and they weren't interested in rushing to market. They wanted a layered, strategic approach to security. And what they did is they could have went out and bought tools that sort of did it, but they wanted to have one that they themselves felt proud of that was purpose-built to provide that layered security, you know, to really not only affect their internal stakeholders and obviously the external, you know, consumers of those credit cards, but just to watch the depth and the detail. And they saw value in having Secure Suite and hardened images combined together to provide that unified solution. So they could use SysCap Pro as a way to scan images when they're done. They could take the benchmarks and build those into their build process, right? And we're watching this, Michelle and I, we're hearing them in our monthly, sometimes quarterly updates, and how they look at this. And they it's not a question of whether or not CIS is the right fit for them. It's just how many places they can really layer that in. So Sean, when you talk about that shared responsibility, you know, those types of organizations we've been working with are taking that to the next level. They're not interested in a quick fix. They want that secure fix that's going to stand the test of time and all those intrusions. So really, it's just a blessing that we get to work with companies like that.
Oh, absolutely.
Another situation is a large auto manufacturer that Michelle has spent a ton of time with. And I think here in the use case in the story, Michelle has such a great relationship that they keep coming back to him seemingly every few weeks or a month to add in new variations, new images, to put in new requests. CIS has a sometimes little known feature enhancement request process where we can add in, you know, relevant features and requests from companies. But Michelle's been on top of this with this large auto manufacturer because, quite frankly, maybe it's AI, but they're always coming to the table and they're stretching the normal use. They're expanding that and really pushing those boundaries. Michelle, would you want to add to that?
Yeah, absolutely. They're one of the great examples of policy integration, right? So what they've done is they've baked security into governance, not just bolted it on, right? That's where they've unlocked the ability to scale. Because a lot of organizations don't realize that, yes, you can implement, for example, the CIS hardened images, but who's maintaining them? How is it maintained? How is that pipeline kept clean? How is that success replicated, not just within that group, but for future groups, right? So what I mean by future groups is future employees that come and take the baton from the previous security team, right? So with that being said, I think it's important to kind of highlight the importance of policy integration.
I love that. Again, we're talking about that layered approach, right, Michelle? We're bringing it in, even now at a governance level, being able to populate that through the operational, tactical, even strategic, reaching out and looking for, well, what do we do now in this space? And, Chris, it leads me to this point. I think it's where we're meeting the customer where they are. And again, this is Cybersecurity Where You Are, the podcast, right? But you're doing that. You're living it really every day. And Michelle, being able to, one, interpret need, where's the requirements, provide best practice, provide guidance. And now it creates a secure infrastructure that really, and representatively, we think of particularly the automaker or finance, whomever it happens to be. But think of how that expands the supply chain and how many people connect into them, and they're protected with their connection being secured in that space. And permeating that through a supply chain has huge consequences for resiliency and also this element of repeatability. We want to see these same elements repeated across every infrastructure. Right. We want to have people necessarily utilize these capabilities throughout any industry. And I think it also points to, Chris, this is not just, it's focused on this particular industrial parenthetic. Right. It's everywhere. This is something that can be repeated in many different spaces. Any thoughts there?
One of the key parts to this, Sean, and that was fantastic. So it's like you're sitting on the calls with Michelle and I, because one of the best areas that we've found to really positively affect, an organization's security or just how they look at security really is we talk about global adoption, right? And we want to get into those policy makers, the ones that really dig in and set that policy for an organization. Now, unlike what some people may think, we're not trying to restrict an organization. What we want to do is set up those repeatable steps that, whether it be a certain image variation that's out there today or a certain threat or vulnerability, I'm less focused on that, the specifics of that, and we're more focused on how can we affect an organization so that they look at security in a different way, set policies so that they can manage them. Michelle touched on it. This stuff's going to repeat. It's not about today's incident. It's every incident that comes. And if you have the right practice in place where you recommend the best cyber hygiene you can, best foot forward, that's where we're seeing the most success. And I tell you, it is such a good feeling when you talk to an organization and you work with them, and maybe it's 90 days, maybe it's a year, and at the end of it, you see and they thank you, hey, we've added all this because of these interactions we've had. That's what makes this job so rewarding, is when you see that, and regardless of whether it's specifically AI or any other threat, if you put the right processes and practices in place and they're repeatable and scalable, you're going to be okay.
Wonderful. Wonderful. I see it at the booth as well. And again, I mentioned San Francisco before RSA. I see people come in just thanking us, right, for what we're doing, the interaction, talking to you personally. Oh, hey, Chris, we did this, we did. And just creating those relationships that are actually meaningful, where people would actually come up and thank you for that type of work. I think that speaks volumes, Michelle. I think it's, one, all part of our mission. But two, I think it's really, truly the effect we have on others in order to, one, have that type of reaction, I think is something you can't really buy. I think that's something that just takes dedication from team members like yourself and just following the CIS way. Any thoughts there, Michelle?
Yeah, I really want to stress that. That's a great point, Sean. So thinking about this as a team sport, right? Cybersecurity is a team sport. Whether you're in the finance industry, whether you're in oil and gas, manufacturing, or even if you're in the same industry but are maybe competitors on a different front, you're not a competitor in cybersecurity. You're not a competitor when it comes to risk, because you have the moral compass is you need to take care of yourself, your organization, and your customers. And we see that a lot at CIS. And I think that's what's really awesome, not just about the hardened images, but about the benchmark, SysCat Pro, some of the tools that we offer. One of our biggest assets, and I will say this again, is our platform, is Workbench. It is community driven. And the amazing part about that is we have organizations like in the payment card industry and like a major auto manufacturer, where we've seen them ask questions in communities within Workbench and get answers from other people in the same industry in within that community. I mean, that's just building trust right there. So when I think of going to RSA and they come and thank us, inherently, they're also thanking our partners and our other vendors that work with us to build this ecosystem. I hope I answer that to the best of my knowledge, because that is something that I've always stressed on. And I love, that's the aspect I love about working for CIS.
Yeah, no, 100%, Michelle. I mean, you guys live this and you see the effect that it has. And, you know, it's great for me just to be there to see that occur. And it's, you know, how the team has done, how they've worked with us, how we've been part of really their team in a lot of cases, providing consultation, being a partner. So important that that exists and that we are constantly going through this process. And Chris, you know, we'll finish off with just this thought. It's not just a, oh, you haven't hired an image. Good. Thank you very much. You know, we'll talk to you when we re-up in a year or whatever it happens to be, right? We'll contact you when we want to. You guys, I mean, this is, I mean, talk about 90% communication. This is just what you do, is making sure, one, happy with what's going on, any issues, anything that needs to be resolved, what can we do for you next? That's a tenant that I think is really a lost art in a lot of cases, Chris. But again, just want to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, Sean, that's spot on. The way that we view it, it's lifecycle management, right? And these organizations, it's not a set it and forget it. It's not a, you know, hey, I'll see you next year type of thing. Their needs are changing. They need to maintain a relationship, and we're their connection, we're their lifeline. They can come to us. They can say, hey, this new application got, you know, thrown on my desk, and I've got to figure this out. Can you help? You know, we will pull in people from the product team. We will pull in people from AWS or Azure or Google or Oracle, right? So we're going to leverage a number of different teams, a number of different resources. And again, here at CIS, thankfully, we've got teams. We've got the services team, the secure suite teams, right? So there's a lot of different resources we can pull to the table and really help an organization as they review their security, right? And what you did, you're doing today may not be the same you're going to do in 90 days. It's life cycle. Manage that. Keep asking questions. Keep digging in and keep looking at, hey, how can we get better? And that's what we do. So we keep those lines of communication open as much as possible.
Wonderful. Chris, Michelle, absolutely fantastic. We're going to have to, I think we've only touched the tip of the iceberg on this, but such great insight, and obviously appreciate your leadership in this space and all you're trying to do to affect the world. Congratulations. And again, thank you both so much.
Thank you so much for your time, Sean.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you so much for having us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And thank you to our audience. Make sure to subscribe in all the usual ways through your preferred podcast provider. Catch us on YouTube at The CI Security for episodes like this and much, much more. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the podcast today.
The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS.
Tune in on Wednesdays for a new episode. And in the meantime, visit our website at cisecurity.org.
Together, we'll continue our efforts of creating confidence in the connected world.